Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kriti Kadhini Nakshatran Indho Patnyas Tubharata Daksha Sapat So Napatyas Tasu Yakshma Graharadita Kritadini Nakshatran Indo Patnyas Tubharata Daksha Sapat So Napat Napatyas Sopat Napat Tashu Yakshma Grahar Dita Kritikadini Nakshatran Indo Patnyas Tubharata Daksha Sapat So Napatas Patsu Napatyas Tasu Yakshma Graharadita Kritika Adhini, headed by Kritika, Nakshatrani, the constellations, Indoho, of the moon god, Patnyaha, the wives, to, but, Bharata, O Maharaj Parikit, descendant of the dynasty of Bharata, Daksha Sapata, because of being cursed by Daksha. Saha, the moon. Anapatya, without children. Tasu, in so many wives. Yakshma Graha Ardita, being oppressed by a disease that brings about gradual destruction. Okay, then back at 19. Huh. The Prajapati Angira had two wives named Swaha and Sati. The wife named Swada accepted all the Pitris as her sons, and Sati accepted the Atharvangirasha Veda as her son. Kritsava had two wives named Archish and Dishana. In the wife named Archish, he begot Dhumaketu, and in Dishana, he begot four sons named Vedashira, Devala, Vayuna, and Manu. Kasyapa, who is also named Tarksya, had four wives, Vinata, Suparna, Kadru, Patangi, and Yamini. Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds, and Yamini gave birth to locusts. Vinata, Suparna, gave birth to Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, and Anuru, or Aruna, the chariot driver of the sun god. Kadru gave birth to different kinds of serpents. O Maharaj Parikit, best of the Bharatas, the constellations named Kritika were all wives of the moon god. However, because of Prajapati Daksha, had cursed him to suffer from a disease causing gradual destruction, the moon god could not beget children in any of his wives. Purport. Because the moon god was very much attached to Rohini, he neglected all his other wives. Therefore, seeing the bereavement of these daughters, Prajapati Daksha became angry and cursed him. So we see that Daksha, he's very intent on his duties to populate the universe. He's a dyed-in-the-wool karmakandi. And he's very expert in this process. He knows how to generate the children, how to deal, how to raise. He knows how to do all these things very nicely. The one thing he doesn't know how to do nicely, though, we see is control his anger. Because if things don't go the way he wants, then immediately he's cursing. He curses Narada, now he curses the moon god. So this is the effect. If one is not practicing devotional service, it's very hard to control, actually, the mind. Because the mind being the central feature of all of the senses, controlling the mind means controlling the senses. So because his life is about engaging the senses, and then because of that engagement in a pious way, to be able to continue to engage the senses in a nice way, this is the meaning of karmakanda. I do nice things, I get nice results, I'm able to continue to do nice things and get nice results. Right? That's its whole circle. It doesn't do anything else other than this. So there's nothing to control because it's all about the senses. But then the difficulty is the senses get stopped in any way or restricted, then there's anger. And so we see Daksha always is becoming angry. And it's not necessarily for any benefit, seeing that he is so committed to populating the universe, and he had his whole altercation with Narad Muni over that he was making his sons into great devotees, and they were not taking up household light and populating the universe, so he cursed him. But now in this time, now he curses the moon god, and then he exactly opposes his whole purpose. So his whole purpose is to populate the universe, and now he's cursed his son-in-law so that he can't have children. So go figure, how does this work? So that's the whole point of anger. Anger doesn't function on logic. Anger doesn't function on reasoning. It just functions on, if my senses are restricted in a way I don't appreciate, I respond. Right? So I'm not thinking. That's the problem. So if you don't think, then things don't work out so good, because the process of Abhideya, or the process of application, of activity, means it has to be done with knowledge. So when there's anger, that means the knowledge becomes replaced by the anger, because anger is also in the position of sambandha, it's also in the mode of ignorance. So it is in the material world that relationships are based on ignorance, so when that doesn't work out, you become angry. Does that make sense? So in other words, the knowledge of Shankarshan then becomes lost, then one is only functioning with the anger. Now, it's not that Sankarshan doesn't use anger, but that's to use anger to control the universe, to set things in order. Because he's the one that comes and makes sure all the religious principles are followed very nicely. So anger may have to be used. When Krishna says he comes to support the demons, I mean, kill the demons, support the devotees, so killing the demons means there's anger. So it's useful, but not at the loss of knowledge. In other words, that anger is being applied used to apply the knowledge. Right? Like Prabhupada said, in the fight, the Kshatriyas, they have to be angry. That's why they have that bantering before they start the fight. You know, it's not that they need to insult each other or say something like that. It's just that it gets the mood going, of the Kshatriya mood to fight, so then the fight will be good. You know, so that's a typical thing like you see before the sumo wrestlers start a fight. They have the auspicious, they call it, throwing of the salt. Right? So they don't actually understand why the salt. Salt, but it means in the Vedic, salt being thrown or dropped is inauspicious because it creates a fight. But because their purpose is fighting, right, then rather than sit there and insult each other for a while, you know, like that, then they just throw salt and then there's a good fight. Right? So the whole idea is that if you're dealing with the Kshatriya mood, the chivalry, there must be the fighting. So here then, knowledge and the anger can be used together. But when we see it's based on the emotional position, then the knowledge is lost, only the anger is left. Then we see is that the activity then will be destructive. Because an activity carried out in knowledge is actually based on goodness. So that will give a result in goodness, right? Because to work in the present, which is goodness, I have to have knowledge, right? But if I'm working on anger, I'm working on the past. So I'm performing the activity, but the consciousness is in the past, right? Because I'm angry about something. I'm angry about what? What's going on this nanosecond? No, what happened before. So I'm not in the present, I'm in the past. And so because of that, then the mode of ignorance is the working principle. So in applying that into the situation, that activity will be destructive. Right? Just like if I think about the future, the activity will be in passion because I'm thinking what I will get. That's why activities have to be done without desiring the result. Then they're in goodness. If I think about the past, it's ignorance. I think about the future, it's passion. Only if I think in the present, that means I can't have desire. Right? It can't be based on false ego, or it puts it in ignorance. It can't be based on what I'm going to get out of it. That puts it in passion in the future. So I have to function in the present. Functioning in the present, that makes it goodness. That means it's based on knowledge. Right? I can only function in the present if I'm using knowledge. Because if I use my emotions, I will be in the past or future. I mean, yes. So that's the whole idea of the Vedic cultures. How to function in the present, because that means then it's progressive. So that means it has to be based on knowledge. Right? And the result in the future has to be based also on its duties. Therefore, the proper performance of duties. So here we're discussing Daksha, because, how you say, he's one of the main figures in the whole chapter, as it goes through his different daughters and this and that. He's the constant, right? So we're bringing his point up first. So Daksha then, by functioning in ignorance, then it's destructive. So he's not actually benefiting his duty. Right, because his duty is to see that procreation is going on. And now he's just stopped it from going on. So that means he was not doing his duty. So his duty is not to curse your son-in-law. Right? That's not part of the process. Right? Does that make sense? That can't be part of it, because otherwise you may think it's my service, it's getting obstructed, so he needs to be punished. Okay. But then what is the result of that punishment, right? Because the thing is ignorance being destructive, it won't take it into a proper future. Right? Only the mode of goodness can do that. So now it ends up his daughters won't have any children. So that's not very good. And this is 27 daughters. It's not like some of the other personalities who have two wives, four wives, like this. He's got 27. You know, one of the ones that has the most. Right? And now all these daughters can't have children. So this is the whole point, is that if we don't function in goodness, which means performing our duties with knowledge, then we will end up doing something wrong, because it will be passion or ignorance. It's just mechanics. That's all. Does that make sense? Right? It's not, if I put bananas in the bowl, what do I have in the bowl? Bananas. Okay, what if I put apples in the bowl, what do I have in the bowl? Okay, now is this a matter of sentiment, or is this just fact? Fact. Okay, so the present is the mode of goodness, the future is the mode of passion, the past is the mode of ignorance. You perform activities in the present, in goodness, then you get the proper result. And goodness means it has to be with knowledge, based on duties. If it's based on duties, but you're looking at the future result, that's passion. If it's not based on duties, then it will be in the mode of ignorance. It has to be sentiment, you see? So it's just facts how it works. You know, it's a science. You know, so it's not an opinion. This is just the way it works. And we see the result is here. Okay, so for Daksha, it doesn't work out very good. It doesn't work out for his service. It doesn't work out very good for his daughters. It doesn't work out for the moon god. That's the mode of ignorance. Nobody gets any benefit. You know, it's one thing, at least with Narad Muni, because he's a transcendentalist, and he gets the benefit that he doesn't have to stay in any one place, so he doesn't become attached. So he can just travel and preach, and no one can complain. Why doesn't he sit down and, you know, run a nice ashram or something? You know, he's cursed. What can he do? Like that. So there, it works out nice on the transcendental platform. But on the material platform, it doesn't, like with Krishna. He was cursed by Gandhari, that I think was after 27 years or something, his dynasty would be destroyed. Like that. And then he thought about it and said, I won't counteract this one, because I was wondering how the Yadus were going to leave. There had to be some excuse, right? It's a pastime. And so then it worked out nicely. So for on the transcendental platform, these things work, but on the material, they never work. Now the moon god, then we see here is that the verse is Krita Dini, headed by Krita. So that means of the 27 daughters, the leading daughter is Kritika, who happens to be the nakshatra just after Rohini. Right? If you look up, if you see Rohini, you'll always see Kritika and Mrigashirsha. Mrigashirsha or Mrigashira? Shira. Okay, Mrigashira. So you always see those three. They're always together. So Kritika is the first, and technically Rohini is the last. So she's the youngest, you know, of them. Whatever it is, youngest either by age or by pecking order, whatever it is, that's the order. So now this is where the moon god is making a mistake, because when you have an already established order amongst women, you don't play with that. They've established it, you don't play with it. So he's now taken... put the last one into the first, it's going to cause problem. Right? Because that everybody else adjusts from there. Because if you've adjusted one, it's not that, okay, you just have everything over, and so Kritika is two, and like that, it just goes. You know, and then now Mrigashira ends up as last, right? You know, so then, but no, it's that as soon as you upset the process, now it's open season. Right? So now it's just going to create havoc amongst the girls. So now he's made this mistake simply out of his attachment. Same as Daksha. Right? Daksha's attached. He functions on that material platform, doing things whimsically. Moon God's doing the same. Right? In general, they do everything perfect. That's why these great personalities, the example is given of them. Because other than these few cases, they do everything very well, right? Daksha is called expert, not idiot, right? Because he does everything expertly. But now and again, because of materialism, because of karma, he'll do something wrong. Right? Only the devotees can function even in these difficult situations, like Yudhishthira Maharaj.
in the gambling match, there is nothing right about the gambling match. There's nothing right that Duryodhana did, right? Except maybe to ask Yudhishthira to sit down. But I think even Shakuni did that, right? There's nothing he did right. And there's nothing that Yudhishthira did wrong, right? But all the injustices are towards Yudhishthira. So that takes great character. Only devotees can do that. Because we see as devotees can get through these situations, but the non-devotees, they can't. The materialists, they can't. Right. So the moon god here, also acting whimsically, he takes one. It doesn't mean that, okay, he may have his favorites, but it's not expressed as the known fact, the public fact. Right? Girls know what's going on, but as long as it's not official, but he makes it official, that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Officially, it has to be there's an order. Right? Just like with Krishna. Now, of all the queens, who's the head? Rukmini. What are you saying? Radharani, of all the queens. Meaning, you were just, how broad were you taking queen here? I mean, she's queen of Vrindavan, you're so that makes her a queen? Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. That'll work. But here we're meaning of Indwarka. So the wedded wives, because Parakeet then that's has the same rules, but it's the intensity's slightly different. Okay, so then Rukmini. So she at official things, it's always Rukmini, but on the side, it's Satyabhama. You know, it's not official, but when it's Satyabhama's time, then she takes full advantage of it, and he goes with it because of that affection. Right? She can only take full advantage if he's fully committed to that kind of, if he has that kind of submission. Does that make sense? So with Rukmini, it's more official. Perfect. That means you don't get a more perfect couple than that. But you add in this left-wing element, then Satyabhama becomes more prominent. Does that make sense? So that's then the method. So we see Krishna does it perfectly. But the moon god, he didn't. Because Kritika is the official main wife. And then all the others then are in line with that in their own pecking order. It's between them. It's not his order. It's their order. Does that make sense? And so then, but when he's with Rohini, then the interaction may be more intense or more deep, something like that, that's between them. Then it's up to the other wives to try to generate that if that's something important for them. Right? If the right wing, it won't be important, the left wing, it will. But here, he's officially making it. So now he officially upsets them. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's just how the wives are interacting, he's responding, and these kind of things. So what's to complain to the father? But when he officially makes it, then they can complain, because now they have something that religiously is not right. The other thing is just relationship. So now you see then Daksha gets involved, and he's also just as attached the moon god is, just as attached Daksha is, so it works out bad for everybody. Right? So, if it's between the two of them, okay. You know, how you say, the moon god ends up impotent, you know, Daksha ends up with a goat head, fine, but leave the daughters out of it, right? But their altercation ends up, the daughters are the ones that actually suffer. You know what I'm saying? They're the ones who actually end up suffering. Because Daksha, okay, he'll go have some more kids. Right? These ones can't have kids, they'll have more kids. Right? Moon god, then, you know, he has to work with, you know, how you say, getting brighter and not bright and all that. But who ends up with the short end of it? It's the daughters. So that's why one has to think of things complete. That's why duties are there. Duties establish what you're supposed to be doing because your duties include others' rights. Does it make sense? I don't do my duties others' rights are not accomplished. Just as if they don't do their duties, then my rights aren't accomplished. So the modern systems, I worry about my rights and let someone else complain about my obligations. Right? But the Vedic is, I worry about my obligations, I don't worry about my rights. So if everybody worries about their obligations, everybody's rights are taken care of. So we see here is that in their seemingly performance of their activities, they weren't doing properly. Otherwise, then what happened to the obligation towards the daughters and wives? That got lost. Does that make sense? That's the importance of duty. It can't be whimsical. If it's whimsical, then it ends up like this. If it's done according to duties, then it doesn't end up like this. Things work out better. Any questions or comments? Something? Yes. Yeah,
I didn't understand when you mentioned that the kings have the order, but sometimes Satyabhama is prominent.
She's prominent when she's with Krishna, but officially she's not. If there's a yajna, the king has to sit with his wife. So it'll be Rukmini sitting there. The other queens will have their place to sit, but for the ritual it will be Rukmini. They're going to a public program, they visit other kingdoms, it'll be Rukmini. She's the main wife.
And when is Satyabhama prominent?
When she's with Krishna, personally. It's her time.
But are not all of them at the same time together with Krishna?
They are all, means when he expands they are, so at that time they are, but in public, like when Krishna goes to the Sudharma Hall, how many Krishnas are there? There's one. Right, so one Krishna means with one Rukmini. But when he goes back to his houses, 16,108 queens, 16,108 Krishnas, but the play with Rukmini is more kind of official. Intimate, but official. But with Satyabhama, it's not official. In other words, like we see with Rukmini, he's joking with her. But with Satyabhama, there's no joking. It's just getting done what she wants to get done. It's a different process here. You understand? That's the difference between right and left. Right? But you have to be able to pull it off. It means you have to be left to pull off left. Because the point is it's not just getting what you want, it's the intensity is greater. Therefore, the return is balanced. Greater work, greater return. Right wing means less work, less return. So it's more balanced. Right? Left wing means more extreme. So in the material world, right's recommended. But in the spiritual world, then left is more prominent. You're right, in Braj. In Dwarka, you have that just that touch, and in Vaikuntha, you don't see it at all. There is no left there. That's why they were surprised why at Hara Panchami, when Lakshmi showed up at Gundicha, and made such a scene and, you know, had her servants beat up Jagannath's servants. And then when she went back, and he came back, she locked the door. It's just not seen. Lakshmi doesn't do this. She doesn't manifest this left-wing kind of stuff. Does that make sense, though? Okay, thank you. Yeah, something?
I have a short fuse.
You have a short fuse.
Yeah, I can fall into anger.
How short?
Pretty short.
Pretty short. So I should be very careful.
No. I'm okay right at the moment.
Okay, right at the moment you're okay.
But the thing is anger is so, it comes on you like a tiger in the dark or at
yes,
night.
Yes, yes.
And I noticed that, and I think I'm not unusual, whenever I get angry, it's because I really feel I've been misused or abused.
Yes, yes.
And I also really feel like I'm being cheated, or I also feel a sense of great righteousness.
Yes, yes.
And so these are the emotions that rise.
Right.
So and you know, like I mentioned the gambling match.
Right.
You know, well, we got Yudhisthira, that's one thing, but we got Bhima too as well.
Right.
And he's cursing right and left, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, so, but only cursing.
What?
Only cursing.
Well, that's because he was put into his place by his brother.
Right.
But
otherwise, he would have been killing right
yeah,
and left.
Yeah, otherwise, he would have been killing right and left. Yeah, we all know Bhima. So he's considered a great Vaishnava.
Right.
And he's a pure devotee of Krishna. So, I'm wondering, you know, like, is because I have this short fuse and I'm not able to, you know, always put my anger in a box when it's necessary. Does that mean I'm not a Vaishnava?
No, no, it just means it's the particular kind of conditioning. Does it, anger come up quick and go down quick? Or comes up quick and goes down slow?
It comes up quick, it goes down quick, and then it's brooded upon for many, many centuries.
Okay, yes. Okay. Yes, so that'll be predominantly vata, means air is prominent. So air moves quickly, so it goes up quickly, it goes down quickly. Right, but then there's some aspect of the mind that'll be
root on it for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, but that's pitta. So that pitta then doesn't let things go very easily. So that's just the conditioning. Now the conditioning is there, of course, because of mentality. So therefore, in previous lives, the cultivation of your dealings has then developed this in this life. Right, the particular antakarana, your internal senses, you know, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and the consciousness have generated this form, this life, but it's based on previous consciousness and use. So then if it has about, it's more about justice and this and that, that'll be the areas one's working at. But then the difficulty comes is that it's in dealing with it, there's justice and there's the rule, but you have to, like Yudhisthira, think of the bigger rules. Now there's the immediate rule that's being broken, and that's wrong. But you have to look at bigger rules to make the balance, how it fits into the whole environment, okay?
So if you look at the bigger rules, cool, you should never get angry. But the thing is you know, because in the bigger rules, you know...
No, but it doesn't mean that may not get angry. But like Bhima, it's controlled because of the higher rules. So in other words, don't be like Daksha in that, in breaking of a rule, which the moon god is breaking, he's not seeing the bigger picture of him being a Prajapati and trying to populate the universe. So anger may come up. Don't worry that that happens. It's when it comes up, what you do with it. So in other words, anger is a situation you have to deal with. It's what you do with it.
Well, I haven't killed anybody yet.
Okay, well then you're, then like Bhima, you're doing okay.
Yeah, but I've wanted to many, many times.
Okay? That's another thing, you know, that's called fantasy, right?
Those
you know.
Fantasies I enjoy quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah, and it's probably quite amazing, you know, the way you put them together, right? You know?
Sometimes I say to myself, I think I'm doing pretty good with the anger issue because I haven't killed anybody yet.
Yeah, but you also just see that it doesn't affect your service, your lifestyle, the quality of your life.
Well, it affects everything.
I mean that you do something that affects it. You understand? So that's then that's fine. Just keep that up, and with time as we chant in that, that'll get purified and that will... You didn't get what you said. Oh, okay. I was saying is, in other words, anger comes up, but if it's controlled, that it doesn't apply into something that's destructive, right, other than the fantasies, then that's good. So that's a position that's also probably been worked on for many lifetimes. Right, because if you function in the political field and all that, generally you start off kind of at the end like Duryodhana, you know, Shakuni, where it's all about yourself, and then it takes time to get it where it's about the justice and this and that. But the point is that, so it's progressive that you're not applying it. That's what we're saying here in the verse, is that Daksha, his anger, he acted upon it, and therefore it was destructive in its application. So here, if the anger comes up, but it's not applied, then that's all right, that's controlled. And then with time, with practice, it becomes more and more controlled. So the first thing to work on, easiest, is don't worry about that the anger comes up. I'd worry more about the brooding, because that's the one that's going to affect you the most. Anger comes up, goes down, that's just in the moment. But the brooding is going to be the thing that'll be long term, because forgiveness is one of the main qualities of Brahminical culture, of the Brahmin. So in other words, we see it's the modes of nature acting. They're instruments. Whoever is doing wrong, they're involved in a wrong. But actually, there's why it's happening to you, there's something greater happening. And so that's coming from reactions of past. So they're the instrument. They're wrong. They'll get a reaction for it. That's definite. But for you to not be involved so much, by to let it go, then you will not be affected by it. It may externally bother you, but your mind will be peaceful.
Very wise words, Maharaj, impossible.
So that was what we said last week. Again, shooting rhinoceros. Go for what's impossible. Yes, but what we're saying is you can work on it, because the residue is that resentment and other things like that. So that's what we're saying. You don't attack the middle, you go around the edges. It's just like the example is given of, what's his name? Chandragupta, right? Chanakya, he was grooming Chandragupta to take over the kingdom. So when he had gotten into a position, he's not the king yet. He just has some power, he has some army and everything. He attacked the capital city, and he was repulsed by, he was defeated by Maharaj Nanda, right? So then he's going back, and he's lost everything, and he's incognito, so he's moving through the villages. And when he's going through one village, there was this mother, and she brought out some hot khichdi on a plate, put it down on the veranda for a young son to eat. And he was very excited, and he stuck his fingers right into the middle, and then he burnt himself. And his mother said, don't be like Chandragupta, where you immediately dive for the middle. You have to go for the edges that are cool and then slowly work in. Like that. And so then, understanding that, then he went back, built up his power base again, and then took all the villages and slowly moved into all there was left was the capital. Then when he, then when they dealt with that, then it was successful. Brooding. You don't know brooding. Brooding means something went wrong and I'm thinking about it, how it shouldn't have gone wrong, it should have been. I just think about it like that. So, first of all, is you have to use basically the Vedantic tact. Well, you can look at one practical thing, you can look at, there's nothing you can really do about it anyway, so why even be worried about it? That's a practical point. Then from there you can work up as that one is there's no benefit for you by worrying about it, because you only put yourself in anxiety. The other person is not in anxiety at all. You know, so then that does. And so, yeah, and then there's better things you could be doing with your thoughts. You know, you could be thinking about service, reading about Krishna, chanting, associating with Vaishnavas. So you just start bringing it up. You could be doing devotional service, and then you can get, so those things work, you take that. The other is that those philosophic aspects of that we're not the doer anyway. It's not us. So we're not involved. We're just experiencing this. Our conditioning is going through this, and because we identify with it, we become affected. We don't identify, we don't become affected. So just like that, you start through. And the main thing is, well, what should I be doing now? Okay, something's happened, but what should I do right now? What can I do, you know, to benefit my life? Since I can't do anything about them, even though, how you say, my Calcutta taxis, my fantasy was, after dealing with them, they make me so annoyed that as I get out of the car and they start to drive off the street, the earth would open up and their taxi would fall inside, right? you know, and then the ground would close again and we'd walk off with a small, wry smile on our face, right? You know, like that. So, but, you know, but the point is now what can I do now? Now I'm out of the taxi, what should I be doing? You know, like this and that, because, you know, the point is it's a taxi wallet. That's what they do. They annoy you. That's their business. Because if they annoy you enough, maybe they'll get some money out of it. Because it's happened once or twice. You know, it's like the dog. You know, if it pees on the carpet once and gets away with it, it'll think it can do it again. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is this, you just have to, okay, what can I do now? What should I do now? Because he's just going to try. That's their job. Because if out of 10 times of harassing, one time to get money, to them it's an investment. It's worthwhile. You know, because they're a taxi driver, so they're not worried about their social position or etiquette and anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, then you try to think, okay, well, what could I do now in this situation that would, you know, be Krishna conscious in that? That the other thing may be wrong, but what can I do now since there's nothing to do about that? There's nothing. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, then slowly, slowly. And then the chanting process will naturally make knowledge detachment will come, and it'll just come with time. So, in other words, if other things have gone away quite easily, like you mentioned, lust isn't such a great thing, that means those are lighter things. This is the heavy one. So this is what's there for many, many lifetimes. Otherwise, you see, somebody's there, they're doing all kinds of nonsense, they take up devotional service, they don't do any of that nonsense ever again, and they don't even think about it. Those were light. Those are maybe acquired in this lifetime, or... Right. But things that don't go away, these are over more life, so they'd stay around longer. But it becomes focused. Does that make sense? So like that. So it's just with time it'll go. Okay?
Time?
Yeah, no, I still have another few minutes. Yes? You need this funny little thingy here.
You were talking about cursing.
Cursing.
By Jakshat. So I'm just wondering, what's the actual technical term of being cursed? Because it seems that even as devotees in our movement, we may speak ill of somebody or label somebody in a certain way because they made a mistake or they were in ignorance and just did something wrong, but not with an intention to harm or do something.
That's just criticizing.
Okay, yeah.
Criticizing means you may be pointing out the faults for they're correct or not correct, for better, for worse, rich or poor, you know, the whole thing. So, but cursing means is you actually, there's a particular effect you want to get and you have to use your potency to affect it. So that's why in this age, generally cursing doesn't work, which is a good thing because people don't have the character otherwise. There would probably just be, you know, 7 billion little piles of ash on the planet, you know. And the last one will be only like half burnt, right? You know, because he was somehow or another, you know, in the, what do you call it? Isn't it called a Mexican standoff? You know, so then in that whole thing, when that unfolded, then he was the last one that only got part of it because they were focusing on everybody else. So, but the point is these other ages, they had potency because of their austerity, because of their knowledge. So therefore, that's what gets burnt up. So it's not that they just say it and walk off clean. It gets burnt up. Just like if you want something done, you have to spend money or put in effort or put in emotion. So cursing means you have to put in potency that's gained through pious activity. So when you curse, you actually burn up your pious activities. So that's why Vaishnavas don't get involved. Because we'd rather use our piety to be more Krishna conscious, right? Because generally, pious people surrender, impious don't. Does that make sense?
I'm just wondering, like, how you would curse somebody. Is it just like a declaration that I curse you to become, you know, a demon?
Yes, but you have to have the potency, just like, you know, it's like a... You know, it's just like, you know, oh, that's what you're going to, I'll show you, you know, like that. And then, you know, you can't come forward with it, you know. You think your car is good, wait till you see mine. So unless it's, you know, unless it's a Maserati or something, then don't say that. If it's a Fiat, don't bother. You know, unless your Fiat doesn't have any dings in the bumper and his does, and see, my car is so much, you know, then you can do it.
So that's a curse when you actually declare something
you
and
declare.
You want to kind of follow through with the
yeah,
curse.
In other words, your own potency goes into that. Your own piety goes into that. As you see, Bhima, when he's cursing, he's saying, let me kill these 100 sons or, you know, break Duryodhana's thigh or rip out Dushasana's heart. Right, you know, all pleasant thoughts, okay, you know, for the, yeah, so then, but he says, or may I not go to heaven, so all the piety that he has that would take him to heaven, all that will be burnt to effect this, you understand, so nothing's for free, so that's why it says, a Muni is someone who can curse. What does that mean? We look at, oh, he can curse. No, it means he has the piety that he can actually do something. Right? Does that make sense? So, I mean, the Western has this thing, is okay, you have this wicked witch and she turns everyone into frogs. What is...